Thanks for joining us in the trenches with Dave Lappin, brought to you by First Star Logistics. And man, we've got a treat for you. It's a big time guest right here, a guy named Chris Collinsworth, Pro Bowl player with the Cincinnati Bengals, got into the broadcast world, elevated to the number one position in all of the National Football League from broadcast assignment, Sunday Night Football, prime time. He's a prime time player, prime time broadcaster. And now, an entrepreneur as well with Pro Football Focus. He's turned that into a juggernaut. It is the authority on all things football at every level of football that you can imagine. We're going to spend some time with the legendary Chris Collinsworth. You're going to like it. Welcome once again to In the Trenches with Dave Lappin, brought to you by First Star Logistics, and we're coming from our beautiful studios as always. And man, it's showtime because we got ourselves a guest here today. Now, it is a guy whose personality is infectious. Everybody associated with the game of football knows of Chris Collinsworth. CC, my man, appreciate your visit and giving us some time.
What's happening, man? What are you doing?
You're doing nowhere near enough, I can tell you that, compared to what you're doing. I mean, let's talk about Chris Collinsworth. Okay. Tremendous football player with the Cincinnati Bengals. Then you get into the broadcast world. You ascend to the very top of the broadcast world. You know, you're a Pro Bowl football player, ascend to the top of the broadcast world. Pro Football Focus has become just, I mean, it's the Bible of football. There's no question about it. It's amazing. I mean, the level of accomplishment is really unbelievable. You've lived a hell of a life, my man.
It's about to kill me, I guess. I have no idea. No, I have. I've been lucky in a lot of respects, but it's an amazing place, Pro Football Focus. It really is. We were just talking about it a little bit. It's right. We're probably going to be at 200 full-time employees and like 800 part-time, so like 1,000 employees, and they're all your kids. You know, you start to feel responsible for all of them. You want to make enough money to where you can pay all their salaries and give them raises and give them bonuses. And, you know, and it's all happening here in Cincinnati. So I'm very proud of that, too. I always wanted to do something that gave back to the community. We're here in Over the Rhine. And that's fantastic, too. It's amazing what's happened in this community over the last 5-10 years. And the soccer stadium, TQL Stadium, right down the road from us. So it's been a lot of fun. I know you feel the same way about this town. You want to do right by Cincinnati because Cincinnati always did right by us.
You're right. That's a great way to sum it up. There's no question. And I know from a philanthropic standpoint, you know, you're on point with all with that part of your life as well. I mean, you've done a lot for the Cincinnati and greater Cincinnati community, no question.
Yeah, we do the Pink Ribbon Luncheon every year for breast cancer awareness and to raise funds for, because, you know, so many people think of breast cancer as the mammogram, and that's certainly the starting point. But there really are better tests out there right now, not to get into too much of the details, but for dense-breasted women, I mean, there really is another test that they should have with the MRI, with CAT scan, whatever the case may be. A lot of times it leads to biopsies, and you know, every step you take is a new test, a new fear. And when we first got started doing this, it really was like if you went in and had a positive test on with the mammogram, then you made another appointment and you might get a biopsy a week later. And then 3 weeks later, you heard what some of that result was. And then any procedure, you know, it was just like mental torture to be stretched out over a period of a couple of months sometimes before you had the answer from one bad test. And so what we've really tried to do is condense it, also create opportunities for everybody to have access quickly to the next step in the procedure, so you don't have to go through this mental torture, and then do some of the tender loving care. We give out pink ribbon baskets with educational material right down to a silk pillowcase if you're one that loses your hair due to the you know, radiation or whatever else may come along in your life. So yeah, we give it a shot. Not that I really do that much. My wife, Holly, Dr. Pomerantz, Penny Pomerantz, his wife, they do everything. So I'm always the one that comes on the shows and goes, oh, look what I'm doing. And in reality, I show up on game day, you know, try and goof around a little bit at the thing we do every single year. But it's moved the needle, I think. And I think that's a good thing here.
And what about, I know probably the most important thing to you, obviously, is your family. You mentioned your wife, Holly. You've got, you know, athletes galore. Your son's great athletes. Austin is working with you, pro football focus. Jack's doing USFL play-by-play, does Notre Dame stuff, does NFL work. And I know your daughters are, you know, really good collegiate sprinters. I mean, your family must be a big source of pride for you as well.
Yeah, two grandbabies, another one on the way, due in the middle of June. Yeah, so we're headed that way, and so I do that well. I like being a grandpa. I didn't know that you could apply for that job, but I'm really glad to have that job. I just lie on the floor and let them jump all over me, and you know, sometimes they get a little bigger and stronger. You take a couple of blows, you know, you take a few shots here and there. But I it's fantastic. I love it all. I love dance recitals. I love ball games. I love whatever they're into, I'm into.
So what do they call you, Chris?
Caddy. So my nickname in college and some with the Bengals was Cadillac.
Yep.
And so they came up with, like, I had all those other names, and I don't even remember how I got started, but I was like, well, all right, that's pretty cool. And because it kind of rhymes with daddy, they kind of get to it faster than they do, you know, Holly or grandma or whatever else. So it's, that's good too.
Yeah. Mine call me buddy.
Oh, that's good. I like that one too.
Yeah.
That's
good. Yeah. Buddy. Or, and then sometimes Budster, Bud, you know, they get cool on me, but whatever. It's, I'll tell you, there's nothing like grandparenthood. You're right, man. That's like, oh man, that's the best thing in the world.
I never would have thought I would have ever gotten here, but here we are, bro. Here we are.
All right, so let's talk a little football. How about what's going on with your crew? I mean, you're the only common denominator. You're the guy. You're the person that is the anchor as such. Been there through the whole nine yards. Some turnaround in this year in terms of the broadcast team, and of course NBC Sunday night. Is number one in terms of viewership for, I don't know, how many years in a row is it now? 15?
11. So 11 straight years, yeah. And American Idol, I think, held the record before that with six straight. That was wow. The longest running. All in the Family was five straight. The Cosby Show was four straight. But no sports program had ever been number one. You know, not Monday Night Football, Monday Night Baseball, nothing wow. had ever been the number one primetime show, and this is 11 straight years, which is pretty amazing. So people pretty much know everything I do, including sliding in to do the opening on camera and any mistake I've ever made. I had a lady at the airport today tell me, what does she say? She goes, so why do you hate Joe Burrow? I was like, hate Joe Burrow? Are you crazy? It's like he put the Cincinnati Bengals. Oh, I remember you said that one thing when he threw that one incomplete pass, that was a bad pass. I'm like, that is hating Joe Burrow. I'm like, come on. I go, I worked so hard to be neutral in that broadcast. Oh my goodness. I knew I was going to get just destroyed for being biased for or against, or why do you hate the Bengals? Or, you know, you favored the Bengals. And I think we kind of threaded the needle a little bit trying to walk the straight and narrow, but it wasn't always easy.
No, I'll tell you, you've done a tremendous job of that. And talk about, I know you have prior experience working with Mike Tirico, and you talk about the new crew though. What are you excited? Is it giving you like a little injection of energy going into this year?
Yeah, it has. And we just came out of some meetings with the whole crew, and I really only had one bit of advice. And that was, you know, Al Michaels, Michelle Tafoya, Fred Gadelli, who was our great producer, Drew Esikoff is coming back to this team. But, And I said, they were all great. And the run was fantastic. I said, but the only way we're really going to screw this up is if we try to do what they did, right? This is an opportunity for us to put our own signature on the broadcast. And if we do that, we're going to be really successful. If we try and impersonate anybody else, if I try to become John Madden or you try to become, Al Michaels, it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. But everybody in here has the experience, has been at this profession for a very long time. Let's put our own take on Sunday Night Football. Let's recreate it. And to me, that's kind of created a whole new energy within me as well. I'm trying to examine everything that I've ever done and think how I can get better and how I can improve and how we can do it together. So I'm really excited. There were some fresh new ideas that came out of what we were going to try and do with this year's broadcast. And I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the synergy, you know, between this new group. I mean, you got some real talent, obviously. And it's just like any team, though. I mean, repetition breeds comfort level, and everybody has to find their space and all that sort of thing. It's going to be fun to watch. There's no doubt. Let's talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. Let's shift to that.
Yeah.
Same type of scenario. There's going to be different players. It's not going to be the same team that went to the Super Bowl last year. There's going to be change. If you stay the same, you're getting worse in professional sports, and they're not going to stay the same in any stretch of form. You've been on Super Bowl teams. How tough is it to get back?
We didn't do it, so it must be hard, you know. In 81, we came back and backed it up with a strike-shortened 7-2 season and then got blown out by the Jets, who wouldn't have even been in the playoffs under a normal circumstance because they were the 7 seed. We were the 2 seed, and Freeman McNeil runs for about 250 yards that day. The only thing I can remember is I had about an 80 yard touchdown pass called back. I was like, I think it is hard. But I really like what the Bengals did. In retrospect, some of the moves the Bengals have made over the past several years and the draft picks they've made, have been home runs. I mean, there's no way of saying anything other than exactly that. Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow, I think arguably the two best players out of the last 2 drafts, and now very young players on those cheaper contracts, not cheap, but cheaper contracts. The Bengals went out and found veteran football players in the secondary that either didn't work out for some reason or they felt they were underpaid. Chidobe Awuzie, Mike Hilton, Eli Apple. Now they're going to add to that. I don't know exactly what's going on with the negotiations with Jesse Bates on the back end. But you draft Daxton Hill and you watch him play at Michigan. And this is a guy that can play outside corner. I know he can play in the slot. We saw him do that. And he has 4.38 speed. If you want to put somebody in the middle of the field, allow you to play a little bit of that single high coverage and have somebody that can cover sideline to sideline if somebody does get away from one of your cornerbacks and get up the field deep. Yeah. So I think that's really impressive, but you could probably speak to the biggest difference on this football team, and that's what's going on up front. For them to have settled up front with Lyle Collins and Alex Kappa and Ted Karras before the draft got started allowed them to sort of go after some best player available sort of things after they fixed what was the primary issue for this football team.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Chris. And, you look at it, I saw a mock draft where you picked Dax Hill.
I liked him.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think he'd be there. And I know the Bengals had him rated as top half. I mean, they had him written on their big board as like 14, 15 kind of guy. And he's there at 31. Man, they jumped at it. And for reasons that you described, they addressed the secondary big time in the draft. This Tyson Anderson, another one, he runs 4.36. They got two guys they drafted 4-3-8 and another one 4-3-6. And this dude, I'm watching him. He's played mostly safety in the MAC. He's a MAC player, played at Toledo. But I watched him out at corner here in their little rookie camp they've got going on with the veterans. Like you said, these guys they draft in the secondary, Chris, are positionless. They can play outside, they can play inside, you know, and in today's football, the way offenses are structured, you almost have to be positionless, right?
You do, because you get stuck in bad positions, especially with the hurry up offenses that we're seeing all over the league. All of a sudden you're in some blitz package, and instead of being, you know, in two wide receivers, they take, you know, a 4-4 tight end and flank them out. And now you better have somebody that can run with them out there, and somebody with a little bit of size that can hang with them, because that's what offenses are trying to do. They're trying to through personnel, get you to match personnel and then change formations to create bad matchups for you. But when you have safeties that can play free safety, strong safety, slot, or cornerback, all of a sudden you're willing to take a few more chances against the hurry-up offenses because now you're in a position, if you do get a bad matchup, that person, at least athletically, is going to be able to hang with whichever receiver he gets matched up with.
You know, the speed, recoverability speed is, I mean, priceless. It's a gold commodity. There's no doubt about it. But you, as a great receiver in the National Football League, what trait that the better cover corners that you worked against, what trait did they all have that was most awesome? I mean, was there a common denominator? Did it vary by guy? I mean, some guys were built a little differently and had this strength. Other guys with different builds, you know, can't do that and have another strength. But was there one or two things that, man, it's almost non-negotiable, they have to be able to do this? Was there anything like that?
Well, you've got to make them make a mistake no matter what. I don't care how fast you are as a receiver. In order to get open, especially get open deep, that cornerback has to make a mistake. But one of the things that you see more and more, and I think of like a guy like Mel Blount or Mike Haynes, that sometimes that length and the ability to get a long arm jam at the line of scrimmage against you. And what so many of them do now is they sort of go the one arm jam. So that, I mean, that stretch, right? You see it a lot with pass rushers too. So when you are able to turn sideways, I look like one of those warriors in yoga pose or something there. But you can imagine how much longer that arm becomes. And if you get jammed at the line of scrimmage, the quarterback almost has to come off of you, because you only get in this league 2.5 seconds to throw the football on average. And so if you're jammed off the line of scrimmage, it doesn't really matter what you do after that. It forces the quarterback to begin to look away. So that's tough. But with the really great receivers today and the ability to make a jamming cornerback miss, so many times that leads to big plays unless they have this great makeup speed. So anytime you see a 4-5-something cornerback, they are either playing off or they are really good at jamming and then retreating. Like a lot of these corners now will jam you. And even if you get away, they're going to take an angle back towards the sideline and cut you off again. So basically take fewer steps. So take a big chance at the line of scrimmage. And if they miss, now they're going to turn and run to a spot about 12 yards down the field so that they can cut you off a second time and keep you pinned to that sideline.
You know, it's interesting you talk about, you know, that one arm jam, because that's, call it a stab in pass rush, you know, same type of thing. They not only measure length of arm, they'll measure outstretched reach from fingertip to fingertip. And these guys are like 4 inches, you know. It's like, are you kidding me? It's like a condor, man. I mean, these long, particularly when they turn and jab, it's like, oh my gosh, man, it's really, they're a million miles away from you. How do you get that arm off of you? And that's these guys are just freaks. So they got these big broad shoulders too. Not only long arms, but broad shouldered guys that just, man, they can use every little inch of that is unbelievable. You look at in today's football, Isaac, Chris Collinsworth, you know, Eddie Brown, Tim McGee, that, you know, I'm talking about receivers that played in the Super Bowl, Steve Kreider. What the heck numbers would you guys be putting up in today's football?
You know, I think there are definite advantages to playing offensive football today that didn't exist. One, you can't kill the quarterback anymore. I mean, the quarterback is so protected that generally you're going to get, you know, if you're going to take a shot at the Super Bowl, your guy needs to play in every game, basically. I mean, that's the way the league is set up right now. But when you think about what they're doing with the footballs themselves, the ability to buffer and to scrub those things out so that they're more like a practice football. Back when we played, you had to take the ball right out of the box, out of the plastic, and play with that thing. Well, it was so slippery that it was really tough. Plus, we didn't wear gloves. So you had a slippery football. You had no gloves. Like, I would really like to play for a little bit with the gloves they have today, with the ball that's been buffed out, with the quarterback that can't get hit, the defensive backs can't hit you in the head anymore. So that is like really something attractive to me. I can't tell you how many sets of stitches I had in my chin over the years from taking one under the chops. So I think, and really offensive linemen can hold in a different way. I mean, Dave, I don't know how many times you've seen it, but I mean, these guys now are wrapping both arms around the outside of both shoulder pads and steering these guys. And I think it's fair. I really think that holding should be a 5-yard penalty, because what are we trying to do? We're trying to complete more passes and keep quarterbacks alive, right? What does that better than anything else? Holding.
Yep.
That allows you to do things like that. And so I think they've really lessened the number of calls, and there's been a real pressure on referees of late to stop throwing so many flags. Well, if that's the case, that means that probably 4 or 5 holding calls a game that may have been called in the past probably aren't getting called right now.
Yeah, and you look at it, the Bengals are a great example. Like you talked about, revamped their offensive line, signed 3 starters in free agency, boom, and day one, get right out there and get after it. Center, right guard, right tackle, taken care of. Left tackle set, the only thing up for grabs is the left guard position. And last year, Joe Burrow rewrote a good portion of the record book while getting sacked 70 times in the regular season, the playoffs. 70 times. I mean, if you cut that down to 40, 45 in that time frame, think of what he might have been able to do. And I'm excited to see with this new offensive line, if they protect better, like you said, and get Burrow more time. They couldn't attack quadrants of the field because they couldn't protect them. Now, much more of the field is going to be available for, you know, Zach and Brian Callahan, the offensive coaches, to get a little creative with routes and route trees and combos and stuff that they might not have even been able to think about because, man, we just can't protect them. I mean, I'm excited to see what it might look like.
Yeah, I mean, you go back through, and I don't want to insult teams, but I don't think either the Tennessee Titans or the Kansas City Chiefs would say that pass rush is their real strength, especially off the edge. And it allowed the Bengals to get them. And unfortunately for them, they ended up playing the Rams in the Super Bowl. And the Rams' strength really is their ability to get after it as a one-on-one kind of pass rush group. But I thought this group did a pretty good job in the Super Bowl for like the first half of the game. Yep. And Burrow was getting the ball out very quickly. And they have to be, you know, I mean, losing a Super Bowl is brutal. I mean, you wake up with it every single day of the rest of your life. You lose 2 like I did, you know, it's like it never goes away from you. And so I do think that this team is better than the one that got beat in the Super Bowl. The problem is the AFC is so unbelievable this year.
Yep.
I mean, in my mind, I have 2 teams that I don't think could go to the Super Bowl out of the AFC, and that's Jacksonville and Houston. And I originally put the Jets in there, but you look at the draft ball that the Jets have, and they've got a second-year rookie quarterback who's going to be better in Zach Wilson. I think I was like, is it possible they're this year's version of the Bengals? I could see that. And plus, you have to add into it that they're really not in the kind of division like the AFC North or the AFC West, where you're going to be fighting for your life every single day, especially right. in the South. You're going to see Indy and Tennessee again, I think, with four wins over Jacksonville and Houston to just get started. And you can't say that about the North, and you can't say that about the West. So when you look at a team like the Jets and you go, could they beat the Patriots? Yeah, I could see that. Could they beat the Bills? Maybe not. Could they hang with the Dolphins? Yeah, I could see that. But across the board, it just looks like the AFC is going to be a killer. And the NFC, you kind of go, all right, I like Tampa. I like Dallas, right? I like the Rams, and I like the Packers. Doesn't mean Philly can't jump in there. Doesn't mean San Francisco can't jump in there. But Trey Lance is quite possibly going to be the starting quarterback in San Francisco. What does that do? Devontae Adams out of Green Bay. You know, there's only so many teams that I think really are standing there that, you know, really feel like, okay, at the end of this process, we're going to see four or five teams. And then after that, we're going to add a couple that are going to get crushed in the playoffs.
Yeah, this is perfect to lead to the schedule a little bit, like you're talking about. And I agree with you. I mean, the Bengals winning the AFC North is going to be no easy task. I mean, you know, repeating as AFC North champ, never mind AFC champ, is a challenge. The first half of the season, the Bengals, you know, bye occurs in week 10. The first nine games, there's some definite challenges on there. You mentioned Dallas. They play Dallas in Dallas. They've got the division opponents. A couple of matchups on Sunday Night Football we'll get to. But the second half of the season after the bye, at Pittsburgh, at Tennessee, Chiefs at Paul Brown Stadium. Then we got the Browns, the division rival, Paul Brown Stadium, at Tampa Bay, at the Patriots, who, you know, went to the playoffs last year, and their rookie quarterback, Jones, goes to the Pro Bowl. Buffalo Bills on Monday night at Paul Brown Stadium, close out with the Ravens. Gauntlet, meat grinder. I mean, the last eight games of the schedule are unbelievable. And fortunately, four of their last six are at home. But, man, we're talking about unbelievable matchups. And that's a challenge. And obviously, the injury factor, I have no control over that. That's the biggest variable there is. Hopefully, you can stay healthy, because down the stretch there, and that grind, man, that's not an easy challenge.
But I'll say this, that if you slug your way out of one of those tough divisions, which the Bengals are going to have to do, come playoff time, you're ready. Let's think about what happened last year. It was the Cincinnati Bengals, a 4 seed, and the LA Rams, a 4 seed, that came out of the playoffs and went into the Super Bowl. And it could have easily been a 4 seed and a 6 seed, because San Francisco looked like they were in control over the Rams in that playoff game. So I don't know that the number one seed means anything. Both number one seeds got knocked out in the first game of the year at home last year. Of course, Green Bay getting knocked off by San Francisco, and Tennessee by the Bengals. So there are advantages and disadvantages to this whole thing, but I really do think at the end of the day, slugging their way through the AFC North is going to put the Bengals in position to compete with anybody. And the good news is, you read off all those teams, and a year ago, every one of those teams would have said, oh, thank God, we get the Bengals, a softie in the middle of this thing. So who's going to be good and who's going to be bad, especially in the AFC? God only knows. I mean, this is going to be – these are really good football teams.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, the interesting thing, the Super Bowl, like we talked about earlier, the franchise been to the Super Bowl 3 times. All 3 times, the year before the Super Bowl appearance, last place. Losing record, last place in their division. And, you know, lost by 5, lost by 4, lost by 3. So we're getting closer and closer. Hopefully, the next one.
You and I don't have enough lifetime left. Whatever.
Hopefully, get over the hump. And with success like that, going to the Super Bowl, winning the AFC, comes a lot of nationally televised games. You've got a couple of them. Mm-hmm. The Bengals only have back-to-back Sunday at 1 p.m. kickoffs once all season long in their schedule. October 16th, they're at the Saints, 1 o'clock, CBS. October 23rd, Falcons at Paul Brown Stadium, 1 o'clock on Fox. Other than that, no back-to-back 1 o'clock kickoffs. What's that like, Chris? I mean, you did it as a player, and obviously, I mean, Sunday Night Football is a show. I mean, it's, you know, you want to be on Sunday Night Football. What do you think about having the Bengals as a team in that matchup? And what do you think as a player, what's the biggest challenge to playing on Saturday, on Christmas Eve, on Thursday night, on Monday night, on Sunday night, 4:30, you know, you have three more piggyback games at the second game of a piggyback doubleheader, playing great teams, you know, like the Chiefs and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's tough, isn't it? How do you handle that as a player?
Well, I think it's the biggest challenge, especially for a young team. And believe me, I was a part of the 81 Super Bowl with you. And you come out of there, and hey, after the game, if you're young and single, you still want to go out and have a little party time, right? You want to go enjoy yourself a little bit. Well, that's fine when you're playing Sunday at 1 o'clock, because you go home, you get a little rest, you get a good meal, you go out, you hang out a little bit. Monday's a half day. Tuesday, you're off. By Wednesday, practice, you're ready to go. You play on Sunday night on the road, or worse, Monday night on the road. Now you're flying back all night. Now it's Tuesday. Now if you go out and party a little bit, you're doing it on no sleep. Now you're dragging into practice on Wednesday. You're not really as healthy as you typically are. You don't really feel like hearing about the game plan and the coach screaming at you over whatever mistakes you made in the previous game. It's just harder. So for a young football team to accept that you have to handle those weeks differently than what you do other weeks when you play at 1 o'clock, it's a maturity level. And some teams take that on and some don't. So we'll find out about this Bengals thing.
You're exactly right. I mean, I think players, they got to be accountable, reliable, responsible. They got to make some sacrifices, you know, proper training, proper diet, proper rest, all those things. And here's a great example of it. At Baltimore, October 9th, NBC. Sunday night football at 8:20. Then go to New Orleans, Bourbon Street, for 1 o'clock kick, CBS. You kidding me? Sunday night at Baltimore, fly back. You lose Monday, basically. You got to get ready, and then you go down, and if you're a young guy, oh, I got to see what Bourbon Street's all about. Hey, man, you sacrifice a little bit, right? That's what it's all about.
Well, we had some not-so-young guys when we played in New Orleans. Who got a severe tongue lashing from one Forrest Gregg for checking out Bourbon Street the night before the game. And then we got our butts handed to us the next day. So there's something very real about the whole thing.
That New Orleans team shot us out. I mean, we got shot out.
And we were scoring.
We scored 7 points, I think. I think we ended up scoring 7 points. It was a bad one. So I can remember that. That's about all I can remember. But yeah, Forrest Gregg. Nobody could give a better tongue lashing than Forrest Gregg, though, right, CC?
Oh my gosh! I mean, I was like a salmon. If he was coming down the hallway towards me, I just turned and swam upstream with him. I was like, I don't even want to cross him.
He had those laser eyes, man. When that nose started twitching, woo, we were in trouble, man.
Did not want to hear it.
No, did not want to hear it. Did not want to be the target for his tirade. No question about that. How excited are you to have the Bengals on Sunday Night Football a couple times?
It'd be nice if we had them in Cincinnati every once in a while. There was talk for a little while that we were going to get them on Christmas night here, which would have been dandy. That would have been, or maybe Thanksgiving night. I think it was Thanksgiving night. And then that didn't happen. And I was like, oh, well, just any Bengals home game. I mean, they went to the Super Bowl, be good. No Bengals home game, two Bengals games, and both of them on the road. So, I don't know. I got to experience them in the Super Bowl, but that wasn't a home field advantage either. So I'm really happy to be doing those games. I'm so impressed with so many of the people, Lou Anarumo, you know, Zach Taylor, what Katie Brown has done with this organization, I think has been fantastic and probably really underplayed a little bit, her leadership with the football team right now. So I'm really excited about the general direction of the Cincinnati Bengals. I couldn't be more bullish on them. I think they've got a couple of years with these great players on rookie contracts. And they should be thinking about winning Super Bowls, not being good teams. This is a team that very much like Kansas City, very much like Buffalo, You go right down the list, very capable of winning it all. We saw it last year. That was no fluke what they were able to do. And I think they're going to come back even hungrier this next season.
You know, great, great quarterbacks have a presence. And, you know, there's tremendous examples of it. We had two quarterbacks that won MVPs and took their teams to the Super Bowl, and they both had a great presence. And I was talking to Ted Karras a little bit in the locker room, asking him about Tom Brady's presence. You know, it's basically unmistakable. Joe Burrow has that type of presence. You know, you just feel like he's unravelable. He just gets it. He understands it. He's a football savant. You just have this feeling like nothing's too big for him. No moment's too big for him.
Unrattleable. I've never heard that, but that pretty much says it dead on right there. He's a funny kid in a lot of ways. You know, he's so serious that my son Jack was like that when he was a baby, when he was like 2 years old. Like, people would come up and do all these silly things that they do to 2 year old Jim and try and make him laugh. And he would just like look at him like that. And I kind of feel like I'm talking to Jack when I talk to Joe. It's like, you know, but what did Al Michaels in our production meeting said something to him? And he just cracked up. And it was really fun. You felt like you saw that 22-year-old or 3-year-old or whatever he is now, you know, kid inside that protective shell of being the quarterback of a National Football League team, because those guys are about as famous as any human beings on earth right now. I mean, they really are. Everything they do is social media stuff, and it's all over the place, and they can't make a mistake. But what a breath of fresh air, you know, he and Jamar and these guys, they just are. You know, Uzama, I'm going to miss. I thought he was a great personality, a great drafting guy here. But to get a Hayden Hurst, who was, you know, what was he drafted? 17th, 18th in the draft, something like that.
He was 27th, I think. Yeah, first round. Yep.
To come in and be able to take over. I just, you know, it's not going to last forever, right? I mean, at some point, can you pay Tyler Boyd? Can you pay, you know, Jesse Bates, you know, T. Higgins, you know, at some point decisions are going to have to be made, but this team really has a lot this year. They really have a lot. And I think they have a real chance.
And that's the final thing I want to catch up with you about, and appreciate the generosity you've given us with your time. It's been outstanding. And you're as much fun to talk football with as anybody. That's for darn sure. And I know everybody appreciates your opinions and knowledge. Okay. You got quarterbacks making $50 million. You got defensive backs making 20 plus. You got receivers making 20 plus. I mean, I think you could be a great GM. I think you could run a football team. How do you handle the salary cap? I mean, do you hope that the TV revenue doubles from where it is? Where does it stop? I mean, my gosh, man, what's happening?
Well, I don't know that it's really changed that much, because I look at it, and so the quarterback is now at about 25% of the cap value if you have a great one, right? So they're hovering around the $50 million mark, you know, a little bit less than 25%. The one that I thought changed the most this year was the wide receiver position, because you've got Hill with Kansas City moving on to Miami because he wanted a big contract. Devontae Adams goes to the Raiders, big contract there. AJ Brown leaves Tennessee in a draft day trade with Philadelphia, because those teams considered that amount of money to be too much, and that they could turn right around. The Titans drafted this kid Burks out of Arkansas. That is very much, that looks like him as a player. He would be a comp for him as a player. So now you have him on a rookie contract as opposed to paying him $25 million a year. So following the money has become a very interesting game right now. And it's unlike baseball, where the Yankees and the Dodgers are going to have $200 million more to spend than the Reds are going to have, right? That's an unfair game. That's not true in the NFL, which is what brings the possibility of every team winning the Super Bowl back into play. And it's so much better a league, in my opinion, than any other league for that reason, that there is a – it's a budget issue a lot of times. It's like, at what point does that position cross the threshold that no matter how great a player you are, we're not paying that? So we're going to get a real lesson this year about how valuable wide receivers and to some extent cornerbacks are in this league, because that number has hit new highs. Some teams paid it, some teams let that player walk, and we're going to begin to get a feel for what is that threshold now.
And final question, we'll get you out of here on this. The National Football League is a minimum 500-pound gorilla from a marketing standpoint, maybe more than that. I mean, it is unbelievable. You've got not playoff games. Super Bowls are getting unbelievable ratings, playoff games, regular season games. But the schedule being announced has become, you know, a national holiday. It gets better ratings than other leagues get in their playoff games. You know, you have the draft. You have the schedule announcement. The NFL has become a year-round marketing machine. Who or what, or is it a combination, who or what gets credit?
I think you start at the top with Roger Goodell. You know, I mean, some people get upset with the way they monopolize the media, but it's what people want to know about. It's no different, though, than the Premier League is in England or the Bundesliga in Germany or whatever. I mean, there are certain sports that capture our imagination, and they're bigger than life in some ways. And I think it's only going to get bigger. You know, fantasy football has always been a huge part of it. But for us at PFF, now you've got legalized gambling, and that's a big reason why people want all the stuff that we have. They want an edge. They want to know something that other people don't want to know or don't have access to. And so I think that the gamification of viewing football, you know, that people, it's not enough. I mean, now on Monday Night Football, you have the broadcast, and then you have the Manning brothers on a second broadcast. Right. You know, pretty soon we're going to have Snoop Dogg, you know, singing on another broadcast. But if you've got, you know, 25 million eyeballs coming to the screen, there's a lot of ways to make money off of that. And everything else in television is going down. It is, you know, it's getting thinner and thinner and thinner. And, you know, you can go to all the apps and you can watch the movies and the made for TV stuff. But football, you still want to watch it live because, yeah, you can tape it and watch it the next day. But the next morning in the office, it's not going to be nearly as much fun if you haven't seen that game. So it's the one place that advertisers still want to be because they know that people are going to sit through commercials to watch what happens next. Because, I mean, let's face it, the playoff drama that we saw this year, people were asking me if it was scripted. I mean, every playoff game after the first weekend was coming down to the last play of the game. Like, this has got to be fake. This is like turning into wrestling or something out here. But it's not. I mean, it's just they've managed to balance the teams in those leagues. The New York Jets kicked the heck out of the Cincinnati Bengals last year.
Yep.
You know, and so, I mean, it's compelling every single week. It's compelling every weekend of the offseason, free agency, the draft, all the different things. And you can't get enough of it. And the weird thing is, after a lot of years, I can't get enough of it either. I really still enjoy it.
Well, one of my favorite things, I love to watch the show, whoever the player, coach, or whatever, A Football Life. Chris Collinsworth, A Football Life. It's still going on, and it's great TV as well. There's no question about it. You make it great TV, and certainly do appreciate your time. And I'll tell you what, you've made Cincinnati proud, man, not only as a football player, but everything else you've done, and your life is special, no doubt.
All except that one lady who wants to know, why do I hate Joe Burrow? I was like, I give up. I give up. I'm done.
can't please everybody, bro. Thanks for knowing you, Chris.
Good to see you, Dave.
Good to see you, sir.
At First Star Logistics, we're a very strict company that really puts the pressure on our employees. Brakes? What are those?
That's what I'm talking about, Icky. Get the body right, then the mind's right. You know,
gotta get that body right.
That's right.
Yes, sir.
Become a star with a chance to earn the highest commission percentages in the industry as a freight broker agent. Check out firststarlogistics.com.